Let's get on with our parenting commentator today. Tongue thrust is a relatively common condition where children rest their tongue too far forward in their mouth. This can lead to slushy sounding speech. Wellington speech and language therapist Christian Wright is here to talk about the condition, how to spot it and what to do about it. Kia ora, Christian. Welcome back.
Kia ora. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. Can you explain more about tongue thrust, what it is?
Sure. So tongue thrust, it's actually a relatively common condition in younger children. So to give you an idea, just so parents don't get too concerned, many children will exhibit tongue thrust in the early years, till about sort of 4 years of age when they begin really transitioning to an adult style of swallowing. But it can, if it persists after six, become a problem. And so what they're looking for and what it is essentially, it's a behavioural pattern that where the tongue pushes between the teeth when the child's swallowing, when they're speaking, when the tongue is at rest even. You can see it sitting up against the teeth, sitting low in the mouth. So the most common, there's three types of tongue thrust, but the most common one is the one where it pushes against the front of the teeth. They call that the anterior tongue thrust. So that looks like when the child is swallowing, if you pull their bottom lip down, as they swallow, you'll see the tongue come between the teeth at the very front of the mouth. It kind of pokes itself through. When they're eating, often they have quite an open mouth posture when they're eating, and the tongue is pumping forwards in the mouth, so they'll often have spillage out of the front of the mouth of things that they're chewing on, depending on the severity of the tongue thrust. And when at rest, they're sitting there thinking about something, their mouth's usually slightly open, the tongue's quite low, sitting forwards against the teeth. In the preschool population, so your 1 to sort of 4-year-olds and even 5-year-olds, you'll see that sometimes. They have their mouth open and their tongue sitting down, but where the issue comes from is the way that the children are swallowing, because it's when you're a little baby, you swallow in a certain way that enables you to get milk from the breast or the bottle that you're feeding from. And what happens for these children is they get stuck in this particular swallow pattern and they don't transition into how we rest our tongue, speak and eat as older children and then going into adolescent and adults. So the signs, I guess, that parents would be looking for to know if there's a problem in the first place would be that they see that the tongue's pushing between or against the teeth when the child's making sounds, particularly sounds that require the tongue tip, sounds like S's and Z's, where the tongue tip will go up or down, so up just behind the top teeth, or sometimes some children park it down. That's how I make my S's and Z's. T's and D's, they go up behind the top teeth. N's, L's, those sounds there, they go up behind the top teeth, and then SH and CH and the J sound. They're all made with your tongue tip, you see. So when someone has a tongue thrust, they'll often push their tongue between the teeth when they're making these particular sounds. And the child often, the second sign is they have an open mouth resting posture. That's very common. So they've grown through the 4, 5, 6, and they're say 7 or 8 years old now, and they're sitting there and you can see when they're watching TV, their mouth's wide open, their tongue's just hanging at the front of the mouth. And these children also tend to be quite chronic mouth breathers. So these are the kids where they don't necessarily have a nasal congestion issue, but they have a mouth breathing issue. They often are they eat with their mouth open because they need to get air through their mouth, or when they snore a lot at night, and when they're concentrating really hard, some children will even dribble a little bit out the front of the mouth because their mouths are so open and they're so focused they're even forgetting to swallow. And some of these kids also have quite cracked, chapped, sore looking lips, because often with their mouth being open, they're lips tend to get quite dry, and they're often licking their lips with their tongue because it's quite far forward in their mouth. And they also lastly tend to be quite messy loud eaters, as we were talking about before. The tongue is pumping away and it's pushing forwards in an abnormal pattern, so they have their mouth open because they're a mouth breather, and you can see the tongue pushing forwards as they're eating. So it's a really interesting condition to see. I see it quite often and do treat it in older children. And I guess the things that I've seen that tend to cause it is essentially that issue. It's not actually a speech issue, and that's the confusion. People often see some children with a lisp and they treat the lisp, but they're not treating the underlying condition. And that's where we need to separate the issue of tongue thrust from a speech sound issue. So we will often, when I'm working with kids, I'll do an assessment to look at how they're swallowing, because that's actually the root of tongue thrust. It's basically, as we were talking about just earlier, it's not really about the speech sounds per se, it's how they're swallowing and what their tongue does when it's swallowing. So I was just mentioning earlier on, when they're little babies, the tongue will pump forwards in the mouth to basically make contact with the breast to create what they call negative pressure, so that milk will come out of the nipple or out of the teat. And so as the infants develop their teeth and they transition to solid food, they begin moving to a new swallowing habit where the tongue tip rests against the roof of the mouth just behind the top teeth, and then they begin propelling food or liquid back in a wave-like motion. That's how they do it. But the kids with tongue thrust, they don't do this. And so we see what I was describing before around the signs, the messy, loud eaters where they're losing food out the front of the mouth, as well as all the speech issues that go with it. And there are a couple of things that will contribute to tongue thrust in terms of making this pattern persist. And one of those is that these kids tend to be thumb suckers, finger suckers. They love sucking on clothing, their hair. As we talked about, they're quite chronic mouth breathers. They're often mouthing objects. Some of the children have tongue tie that can contribute, or they have like a really large tongue. So it's larger than usual. And often that's usually the result of like a syndrome or some kind of other medical condition that's usually present from birth. You don't just grow a large tongue. It's there from when you're born.
So what about treatment for it?
Yeah, the treatment for it, it's really important, actually, that we do treat it in these kids, particularly the kids, as I was saying before, 6 or 7 years and older. Several reasons. The impact of tongue thrust is quite chronic. I'll just go through a few of them. One of them is the shape of the hard palate. That's like the roof of your mouth. So they reckon in about a 24-hour period, on average, most humans swallow between 1,200 to 2,000 times. I don't know who the guy was who clicked the clicker to work that out. It's mind-numbing. But someone says that they did it, so that's what they reckon. But the point is, every time you swallow, you exert pressure in your mouth, your tongue moves, and they reckon it's roughly about 4 pounds of pressure per swallow. So it's like the old water on a rock effect. So basically, you're swallowing, you're exerting this pressure, and when you have a normal swallow, when you've transitioned to a normal swallow where your tongue tip is up against the roof of your mouth, when you swallow, you push against your hard palate. And the interesting thing about your hard palate is it's one of the parts of the body that it grows through contact. So the tongue, the action of it pushing against the hard palate, stimulates the cells in the bone, and it has a shaping effect that spreads the palate. It makes it wide, and there is still a bit of an arch to it. But the children who have tongue thrust, they're not pushing against the hard palate. And so what ends up happening is they get these really high, narrow shaped palates. And that's an issue because the roof of your mouth is the floor of your nasal cavity. And so now you're getting this compressing effect in the nasal cavity where there isn't a lot of room. And then you add into that issues with adenoids and tonsils. But even without those, these children then don't find breathing through their nose very comfortable. So they become mouth breathers. And so we get into this situation where their palate's misshapen, they're breathing a lot through their mouth. And then you start to get issues connected to mouth breathing, which are really interesting. Things like the nose, one of the features of breathing through your nose is that air coming up through the nose, it gets filtered and slightly warmed so that it enters your lungs in a warmer, cleaner state. And these are the children who breathe through their mouth. The air is relatively, well, pretty much it's unfiltered, and it's a lot colder. And they noticed that there was a higher incidence of upper respiratory issues in children who were mouth breathers than those who were nose breathers. And the second thing they've observed is that when you're breathing through your nose, you exhale a lot more slowly, and that gives your lungs more time to extract the oxygen and do the carbon dioxide oxygen exchange. And what's interesting there is the children who are mouth breathers, then they have this issue where the carbon dioxide is essentially lost. It's lost too quickly in the mouth breathing situation. And so the oxygen absorption is decreased and they get this imbalance, which then, believe it or not, it has a knock-on effect that it affects your parasympathetic nervous system and you can have a release of diuretic type hormones. So these children who are mouth breathers, as a result partly of their palate, which is a result of their tongue thrust, tend to be often the bed wetters. So the children who are wetting the bed quite regularly at night. Adults experience this too. We get older, you get into your 40s like me, you can't help but put on weight, you develop some bad habits, and the next thing you know, you're becoming more and more of a mouth breather, maybe you're experiencing some apneas. And they find themselves often waking in the night needing to go to the toilet. So we do see this going throughout the person's life, particularly when it's untreated. And then lastly, the mouth breathers, they often tend to have a lot of issues with gum disease and tooth decay. So there's a lot of impact with tongue thrust. And obviously the last one that I'll just quickly mention is the dental issues. So the impact of your tongue interacting with your teeth when you're swallowing this way can lead to crooked shaped teeth, an open bite where the teeth are splaying out, and they, when you close your mouth, your teeth at the front don't make contact properly because essentially the tongue's been pushing against these teeth over and over, water on the rock effect, and the teeth begin to grow in an outward direction. And those children will need orthodontic care. But you can immediately see the problem if they haven't treated the tongue thrust. And orthodontists are onto this anyway. I get lots of referrals from them for that reason, that we're not going to put braces on you yet, because if we do, it's a waste of your money because your tongue's just going to push it all out of alignment when the braces come off. And some of the people with tongue thrust will also report issues with their temporomandibular joint, the part just at the back of your jaw below your ear. They get a lot of pain and a lot of locked up issues with their jaw. That can also sometimes be connected to tongue thrust as well. The last issue I'll just quickly mention is a cosmetic one. And this is the one that's really odd. I remember talking to an ear, nose, throat specialist a couple of years ago, and she and I were talking about this, and she was saying to me how you can spot someone with tongue thrust because their faces are often very narrow and elongated because their palates are high and the way that they're swallowing and they're a mouth breather, they don't develop a lot of the muscles around their mouth the way that people do when they have a normal swallow, and it can literally change the shape of their face from their nose down. And I just think that's kind of spooky actually, but there you go. The craniofacial can be an issue.
So a lot of reasons to address this. And again, how do you endeavour to?
Look, it's actually a relatively straightforward fix. It just takes time. And I always say to parents when I work with them around tongue thrust, we can fix it. It's just that the problem is it's so boring. And it's really boring for kids to fix. So you've got to think of fun ways to engage them. But essentially, you start by treating the swallowing issue and the resting posture of the tongue, not the speech, because we know that the children are not resting their tongue up against their hard palate to start with. So we play games where we teach them how to place the tongue tip on the spot just up behind the top teeth. And then we move from there into keeping the tongue tip there, taking tiny sips of water, pinning the water, and then propelling it backwards. It's a messy game. It gets everywhere, but they learn it over time, and they then start to develop a more normal swallowing pattern, and then we progress to thicker liquids and then some solid foods, and we work our way into this idea of you're basically going to completely retrain your tongue and how it behaves when you are resting it, when you're drinking, and then we get onto the speech issues. Again, teaching them how to find that spot behind their top teeth and how to use that spot when they're articulating sounds that should be made from behind the top teeth.
I've got some questions. Shall we take them now?
Yeah, go for it. Absolutely.
What is the relationship between tongue thrust and tongue-lip tie?
Yep. So some children who have a tongue tie, depending on how the tongue tie is done, we actually did a session on tongue tie last year, I think. So people can go back into the archives and find that one. But essentially, tongue tie, you can have it that the little, what they call the lingual frenulum, the little cord underneath your tongue is basically grown and attached improperly. So it can attach too far to the front, so that's an anterior tie. So what happens is, and you can have a posterior tie as well, where it's further underneath the tongue and the tongue doesn't elevate properly. But in both circumstances, the tongue's movement is restricted by the tongue tie. They physically can't move it. So all they're left with is to start to adopt, in a sense, or not move on from their tongue thrust swallow pattern, because they can't get the freedom to move their tongue to make contact with the palate. So they get the misshapen palate, the mouth breathing issues, the speech issues. So in some cases, not all, and it's people, if they listen to the tongue tie segment, will know how controversial this is if they go back and listen to it. But in some cases, we release the tongue. And generally speaking, it seems to be tongue releases are better done when children are younger rather than older. They become much more invasive as a more invasive issue. Although I do know of some dentists around the country who provide laser surgery to help release tongue tie. And my understanding from a family who did it was that was actually quite a successful intervention and not too invasive as compared to surgery, for example.
Okay, another one here. We have a Down syndrome boy who's 11 and quite articulate, albeit difficult to understand, who exhibits tongue thrust typical of this condition. When he closes his teeth to make the S sound, as his SLT instructs him to do, it comes out as sh, which I think is even worse than the S he makes with the tongue thrust. Almost as if he overthinks it. Anyway, round this, I have a lisp myself, but do not struggle to make an articulate S sound.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. So in children with Down syndrome, it's quite common that from birth, so congenital, they have macroglossia, large tongue. So it's not uncommon that their tongue is too big and the oral cavity is a lot smaller. They often can have quite high vaulted palates, meaning quite narrow, high palates. So they are obviously having issues with tongue thrust. So the speech therapist has obviously got a plan there and approaching it. It's not uncommon when you're working on S's that you'll get some slushy stuff around the edges, particularly with children with Down syndrome, because they also have sometimes quite a lot of issue managing their saliva, so that can contribute. But in terms of what to do, there is obviously a tongue thrust there. Yes, you would want to try to look at the way that the child is resting their tongue and sipping and swallowing. But you see, you have to balance the best laid plan with what the child is capable of doing. So some of my clients with Down syndrome, there are some things I would like to try, but trying to do that with them can be really difficult for them to learn how to do it. So we have to find workarounds and do the best we can with what that child's able to offer us with, you know, the best of their ability. So it's not as simple as let's just do this with your tongue. It's about the child understanding what you want, that they would be willing to do the hundreds of repetitions to do that. And then there's the issue at the very end of generalization, which is many children, not just children with Down syndrome, children full stop, have trouble generalizing their goals into everyday life. So managing that one would be tricky, but I suppose it might be worth exploring with the child, because I never ever not try something. I always try things with all my clients, because the most dangerous thing about being a teacher is making an assumption without actually having tried. So I'll always give them the benefit of the doubt and try it. And many times I've been pleasantly surprised. So that would be my recommendation. Give it a go.
I've just discovered at 58 I must have had tongue thrust as a child. Mouth breather, high narrow palate, mumble, etc. What can adults do?
Absolutely, you can still retrain it. It's a bit harder because you've been doing it for a lot longer. But I have worked with older teenagers and young adults on it because it's had... There was one woman many years ago, and she would have been in her early 20s, and she had quite a protruding central incisors, her top and lower. And she was interested, and she had worked very hard at a job to earn the money to try and get the treatment, and the orthodontist said, you're going to need to treat the way you swallow, and we did it. And it was hard work for her because she had 21 years, and not quite that, probably 20 years, no, that's true, 21 years of swallowing a certain way. But the enjoyment is the fact that it's, although it can be boring, I find when I meet older teenagers, young adults, they are highly motivated to change it because they've got a goal in mind, and it's really rewarding working with them because they want to change it. And she did. And when I last heard, her smile was beautiful and her teeth were nicely aligned. So that was pretty awesome.
One last one that's not related, and we might save it and do a whole topic on it, but you feel free to give a quick response. Is apparent inability to increase voice projection physical or psychological or a bit of both?
Oh, gosh. Look, I'll be really honest, straight up, and say I probably can't really answer that question because I'm not a therapist who works in the area of voice. And voice is a particular area that some speech therapists work in. So I wouldn't really know what to say to that. But I think that if we did want to do that, I can probably think of someone who could probably do some good a good session talking to us about voice.
Fun. Let's know that. We might make that happen. Thanks very much,
Yeah, sure.
Christian Wright. Thank you, speech and language therapist.